Hey, good afternoon, Juneau. It's about 27 seconds before 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. This is Juneau Afternoon. Pat Moore, your host today. I've got a lineup of guests that'll knock your eyes out this time. Charlie Northrup's in town. Used to be the general manager at K2. He was my old boss back up at KUAC years ago, and he'll be here to talk to us. He's the commencement speaker for UAS's graduation ceremony coming up this next weekend, I think. We'll get a preview of this weekend's Femme Fatale show. It's a benefit for the 4As, and author Tom Walker will come by. He's got a new book out called The 70-Mile Kid. He'll be in town signing autographs. Mary DeSmet and Greg Berger will drop in with notes about this weekend's Full Circle Music 23rd Annual Recital. And quilter Carol Suring will be dropping by to tell us about her first Friday show at the Alaska Robotics Gallery. It's first Friday in Juneau, a little rainy afternoon. Highs around 49, southeast winds around 10 to 20 miles per hour. And then tonight, rain heavy at times. Lows around 44, southeast winds 15 to 25 miles per hour. We'll be back with all of our guests in just a few moments. National Native News is next.
For National Native News, I'm Tristan Ottone, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. The Western Organization of Resource Councils recently released a new report about the consumption of water in oil and gas extractive industries. North Dakota's arid Fort Berthold Reservation is a target for development, and some residents have concerns about that water. Wyoming Public Radio's Irina Zhoroff has more.
The work report focused on four states, Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and North Dakota. It said that oil and gas extractive practices permanently remove at least 7 billion gallons of water annually from future practical use in just those four states. Board member of the Dakota Resource Council and three affiliated tribes member, Theodora Birdbear, said during a teleconference that it's time to consider water quantity in addition to water quality. She also said that it was important to protect water resources, in her case, the Missouri River in North Dakota, for future generations.
For Fort Berthold, our concern is that there needs to be a federal role in this process for us within the reservation boundaries. Our tribal government has no adequate infrastructure to even start to deal with this issue. Where I live in Mandaree is a targeted development area on Fort Berthold. And so I see the trucks going by my house every day.
Birdbear lives in the middle of one of the biggest oil plays in the country presently, the Bakken Field. Energy development advocates point out that the 7 billion gallons of water figure cited by the report makes up a small percentage of total water used in those states. For National Native News, I'm Irina Zhurov.
The Cherokee Nation officially opened the doors to the One Fire Victim Services Office in Oklahoma earlier this week. KUNM's Rita Daniels reports the office will serve as a one-stop shop to help victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, and child abuse.
The Cherokee Nation's Chief Baker says the tribe recognized the need to consolidate their various services in order to expedite response and assistance to those that need help, giving birth to the One Fire Services Office.
The Cherokee Nation basically has all the departments that the state or the federal government has, but there was a disconnect, and the right hand sometimes didn't know what the left hand was doing. So we found it as an opportunity to bring all those services together under one roof as a one-stop shop that coordinates our efforts for Cherokees in need to help these folks get out of their situation.
Consolidating everything from housing and legal assistance to access to drug and alcohol treatments, Baker hopes the new approach will become a model for all of Indian Country. For National Native News, I'm Rita Daniels.
An Oklahoma tribe is gaining a sweet reputation among chocolate lovers. As Kurt Gortney with KGOU reports, a new facility is expanding the Chickasaw Nation's ability to fill the country's sweet tooth.
The Drake Fine Chocolates has resumed operations after moving to a new and larger plant in southern Oklahoma. The chocolatier will produce nearly 300,000 pounds of chocolate this year, shipping it to sweet shops across the nation. Phil McWhorter is the general manager of Bedre.
We're still growing and changing, and I think we're in a good direction right now to really focus on what we do best, and with this new facility really grow the company and make it a good thing for the Chickasaw people.
The Chickasaw Nation purchased Bedre Fine Chocolate in 2000. The company says it is best known for its chocolate-covered potato chip called Crisp. The company also wants to expand its product line and offer new flavors. The new facility is next to the new Chickasaw Nation Welcome Center between Oklahoma City and the Texas state line. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gortney in Oklahoma City.
During this week in 1887, Cherokee Council member Ned Christie was falsely accused of murdering a U.S. Marshal, but Christie was never convicted in court for any crime and was assassinated after a five-year standoff with the federal government. Several witnesses came forward clearing Christie of any wrongdoing, and he became a symbol of tribal sovereignty. Christie opposed railroad development through Indian Territory, which some believe may have contributed to his troubles. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Ottone.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
About 5.5 minutes after 3 o'clock, you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore hosting today for Juneau Afternoon. My first guest is my old boss. Charlie Northrup is in town. He's been selected as the commencement speaker. Some of you will remember hearing Charlie's voice probably during pledge drives back a few years back. He was the general manager of KTOO for a while. Welcome to Juno again.
Thank you. Welcome back to Juno. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So you had quite a history of Alaskan employment before you went offshore. I think you were almost every place at least once, right?
Yeah. The University of Alaska Fairbanks is what brought me to the state.
Uh-huh.
And I was there for 11 years, in and out, doing two or three different jobs. I was not the first manager, but almost the first manager of KUAC-FM, mm-hmm. and then eventually of KUAC-TV. Did a brief stint as the director of media services, which included the AV portion of the operation. But from that base, I was the first executive director of what was then the Alaska Educational Broadcasting Commission,
mm-hmm.
later became the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission. And then was attracted to Juneau by a guy named C.L. Buck, who was Governor Bill Egan's first director of the Office of Telecommunications. And he was interested in my help in helping establish satellite communications as the way forward for communications in Alaska. And so I spent 3 or 4 years here in Juneau as the coordinator of our experiments with NASA's ATS-6 satellite, which was the first U.S. use of a NASA communication satellite.
I remember well. I was working for KUAC when we brought in the very first newscast. We brought in All Things Considered live over satellite for the first time. It was quite a deal.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it was where we demonstrated that you could send television to the bush
mm-hmm.
by satellite. And many things have developed from that.
Yeah, now, as a matter of fact, the latest thing that I've heard is that there are people who are looking to launch personal satellites.
Mm.
A couple of the commercial spacecraft companies
are
preparing satellites that are based on a smartphone, which is built into a radiation-proof box and launched. And they're affordable enough that somebody with an extra $100,000 or so can buy, you can own your own satellite.
Wow.
So.
Yes. Yeah. And, of course, the receiving equipment gets smaller and smaller and smaller.
Yeah, you remember turning the big dishes. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. The initial small aperture dish was about 30 feet across.
Yeah.
That's what they called a small aperture dish.
Now, we used to turn them with wrenches. I can remember cranking the dish around to a new heading. Anyway.
Yeah. And so from there, I ended up at K2 for several years. First the radio, and then we brought the TV on the air after that. And then I was back at what had become the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission, stayed there for 11 years.
And basically stretched public broadcasting, I think, across the state in ways that it had never been installed before.
Yeah. We worked on a complete revision of the APBC rules that firmly planted the idea that the control of the public stations in the communities were with the community.
Mm-hmm.
And when I left the commission, there were over 20 public radio stations, and The same four public television stations that we have today were on the air by then.
Yeah, people may not realize that K2 is now part of I think that your legacy there is the Coast Alaska Network. But the rest of the stations that are in that network are not networked in the sense that you would think of like ABC or something like that. They're individual, very individual. They share an engineer and some support staff and some stuff like that. But basically, the three stations are not, you know, we don't program down on them and they don't program up on us. So it's wonderful. Yes.
And it's oriented to the community.
Mm-hmm.
And that was so very important, particularly in the rural areas of Alaska, way out in the bush, that those places were too small for a local newspaper. They were too small for commercial media of any kind. This public radio station became the lifeline.
So you kind of built on that and took off for places beyond.
Yes.
I think Bosnia first, right?
Yes, I did a 6-year stint with the Juneau Economic Development Council, which helped me learn some things about the business side, which has helped me in what I've done internationally. But yeah, first I went to Croatia for almost 2 years, helped start a private commercial TV network. Our first story on the air when we put that network on the air was that Franjo Tuđman, the longtime dictator of Croatia, was dead. And the state media didn't get around to calling him dead for a week. But we were right.
So this is the first time then for most of the Croatians that they ever saw a TV station that wasn't controlled by the government.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So after that, the other countries right around there as well.
Right. Yeah. I went next to Bosnia, and I stayed in Bosnia for over 5 years. And we did several different things to help develop independent media, and including bringing together three independent journalist associations that were – there were three of them because – each would only admit one ethnic group or religious group.
So you either had to be
you had to be Croat, or you had to be Serbian, you had to be Bosniak in order to be. When we finished that project, we had a unified single journalists association.
Wow.
And we also helped create another private commercial TV network.
Did you ever find yourself standing between the groups saying, hold it, wait, everybody sit down?
You know, I learned early on that if you held a big meeting, that was a big mistake. That you had to deal with the individuals first, you get the agreement first, and then they can come together and kiss and make up. But if you bring them together and say, okay, now we're going to try to figure this out.
Everybody's got to identify turf right in the room. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So then after Eastern Europe, suddenly you're in Africa now.
Well, I had a
With stops along the way.
I had a brief, almost a 2-year sojourn in Southeast Asia, where I worked not in the media directly, but as a communications person for two environmental projects that were working with clean water and clean air and things of that sort. And it was great, and I enjoyed it. But when I had a chance to get directly back into the media, which meant moving to Nairobi in Kenya, I jumped at it.
So your current interests are primarily in Darfur? Is that the big project at the moment?
Our project is based in Nairobi because we can't be in Sudan. And, of course, Darfur is a part of Sudan, although it would rather not be. At least most of the people who live there would rather not be. There have been many atrocities committed in Darfur. The world knew more about it some years back. It's become sort of a back burner issue internationally, but it's still happening. Villages are still being burned. People are being imprisoned without charge. All of that sort of thing is still going on. So we send objective news, information, civic education into Sudan by shortwave radio, which is the most ancient of broadcast techniques, but we combine it with text messaging by mobile phone. Everybody in Sudan has a mobile phone. There are no landlines. They're just leapfrogging right over landline technology. And so they send us text messages. The Sudan radio service is my daily meal of truth.
Yeah.
Whenever I turn on my radio, all the neighborhood children come to listen to the Al-Dawahi drama.
Wow.
You know, there may only be one radio in the house, and it's usually controlled by the oldest man.
Yeah. Charlie, we could talk all day. This is amazing work that you're doing. I'm proud to have worked for you back when up in Fairbanks, and proud that you're doing all of this stuff around the world. You're a great career. So, commencement speaker, you're going to address the graduating class?
That's correct. I think this ceremony starts at 2 o'clock on Sunday at the new facility up above the university, the combined rec facility.
Okay. Well, I will not be able to attend, but I certainly envy the people who will be in the audience, because I think they'll have a terrific speech from you about all of these wonderful things you've been telling us about.
Yeah.
Good to have you back.
Thank you.
Really good to have you in town. And enjoy your stay, by the way. How long are you hanging around?
We fly out Sunday night.
Oh, darn. Well, I thought we could maybe have a party or something like that. But anyway, really glad you came back, and congratulations on your selection as a commencement speaker. And also, you're receiving an honorary Doctor of Laws from UAS,
yes,
I think, at the
indeed
ceremony. Good enough.
Thanks.
Thank you. Bye.
A magical opportunity has come to the JDHS auditorium.
The theater department is performing the musical that they will perform at the International Fringe Festival in Scotland.
Come support these award-winning JDHS students as they perform Pippin,
a story about a troupe of actors who lure a man into a world full of illusions as he searches for fulfillment in
splendor, power,
and glory. May 3rd, 10th, and 11th at 7 p.m.
May 11th at 2 p.m.
Tickets available at Hearthside Books
and jahc.org.
One day, all babies will be born healthy, but we have to walk to get there. You can help by joining your friends and neighbors and the March of Dimes for the March for Babies walk on May 11th at the Twin Lakes Park. 9 a.m. is check-in time, and the walk starts at 10. Register online today at marchforbabies.org and walk for healthy babies. This message is brought to you by the March of Dimes.
Music now by Booker T for a couple of minutes here while my next guests file into the studio. In tune with KTOO News, it's 18 minutes after 3 o'clock. Pat Moore hosting today on Juno Afternoon, and I have a room full of multiple personalities. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing process here, but I have five bodies, but 9 people, which is interesting. So with me are Dana, who is also Delicious, Trevor, who is also Ashley, David, who is also Anita, and Sean, who is also Shaden, and Phoebe. And we're trying to talk Phoebe Rohrbacher into adopting the name Fred, P-H-R-E-D, for the purposes of the show that's coming up, because this is an amazing show. These guys, ladies, guys, however you want to do that, are going to bring us Femme Fatale, which is one of those shows where you don't know exactly what you are watching on the stage, right?
Exactly.
pull that mic right up to your face, if you would, over there. Okay, so we have there's a whole bunch of stuff here, Phoebe. You got amateur night on the second, and then you got the show at the Rendezvous. You got the show at the Baranoff. You got it running all over, haven't you?
Yeah. Well, actually, the show amateur night happened yesterday.
Oh, okay.
So now we just have the three upcoming shows, the show tonight at the Rendezvous,
right,
and then two shows on Saturday at the Baranoff.
Okay, so you missed amateur night. I mean,
well, hopefully the listeners out there went to amateur night.
Yeah, I know, but yeah. If you wanted to be on, you couldn't do it. Okay, so briefly describe your feminine personalities. Who are these ladies that we are on stage? Okay?
How would I? I would describe Delicious as my monstrous alter ego. It's like, if you've ever seen Eddie Medea play, it's like, that's Delicious
right
there.
Okay, all right.
So, stretch marks and everything. We keep it going.
Okay. All right. How old is she?
Oh, I'm not saying that.
Oh, okay. Never ask a lady your age, right?
She's fine like a box of wine.
I'm excited now.
So, my job is done.
Trevor and or Ashley?
Ashley, super tall, Amazon-esque, with the legs for days, blonde, lots of makeup, you know, like a stepper wife, maybe.
Uh-huh.
But she can sing and dance a little, too.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, okay. All right. And how is Anita?
Oh, she's giant, too. She is, what, 4'11 without the heels, but 7'3 with them.
She ate four more Tic Tacs than
yeah,
I did.
Exactly. Maybe five.
Okay.
When I'm not doing drag, I'm destroying buildings in Japan.
All right. And tell us about Shaden.
Shaden's a lot of pretty, a little punk, very chameleon. You never get the same thing twice.
Okay, you really ought to see Shaden's dark glasses. They're amazing.
Little Audrey Hepburn.
Yeah, about 9 inches in diameter and rhinestones all the way around the outside edge. And Phoebe, tell us about Fred.
Well, I do want to say it's amazing the transformation that everybody makes. Last year I drove Shaden around in my car for about 2 hours. And, met. And then we went to, I guess it was Sean at the time. And then I met, I introduced myself to one of the drag queens at the show. I was like, I don't think we've met yet. And Shane's like...
And it was Shane,
yeah,
right?
I was in your car for about 2 hours. So we definitely have met. Oh, gosh. Completely unrecognizable.
So, how long... Have you guys been doing this for a while as a group? Or is this...
Everybody's on and off for a couple years.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm probably the longest out of this group.
Second longest.
But we do the show in Anchorage. This is the core, the core group.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So when you do this thing, I'm curious about how much you have to switch inside your head.
A lot.
You got to put this lady on, right?
It is a complete different personality.
And sometimes it's like you're actually watching the show. It's like you sit back and someone else takes over, and you're just like, oh, I got in for free. I'm enjoying this. So yeah.
It makes it easy. You can take the most introverted person, and then they can be another person. And it's fun for them to actually step into that role, and they don't have to worry about anything that they had going on.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's basically acting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's acting, but it's a dimension of acting that you don't see in every play you go to.
Mm-hmm.
I played a bad guy in a play. And I'm not a bad guy, but it was more fun than anything I've done in a long time, because it was like freeing, man. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
And I imagine that's got to be the same thing for you guys. Yeah. Because trying to put a woman on has got to be like turning some internal switches sideways inside your head. Yeah. Yeah. But then when you get it there...
It's like method acting.
Phoebe, why are these folks doing this show and folks paying money for it? There's an organization involved in this that's really important that we need to talk about.
So I'll just mention it briefly, but we're doing this fundraiser to raise money for the 4As, which is the Alaskan AIDS Assistance Association. And we are a statewide organization, and we have an office here in Southeast Alaska, or in Juneau, that serves Southeast Alaska, and this is our biggest fundraiser of the year, and all the money stays in Southeast. So, provide services for people with HIV and AIDS. We do prevention, and we do needle exchange, as well as HIV testing. So it's a really good program and a worthwhile cause to support.
Can you give us a sense of the numbers of people that you're actually serving?
In the state of Alaska, the numbers would be we have around 300 folks that we serve with HIV, but that does not reflect the overall numbers.
The others that are, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, those are just the people who are getting the services.
Yeah, so this is really, you go to this show, you're going to get the brains entertained out of you, but also every cent you put into the cup at the door is going to go to a really good cause.
Yeah.
So it's like 20 in advance and 25 at the door. Can you still get advance tickets?
Uh-huh, yeah, we've got advance tickets at Hearthside Books, and we have one show that's tomorrow, at the Baranoff 7 p.m. show, the early show. We have a special student ticket price for that show only.
Is that for students who want to become drag queens or students?
Yeah, understudy.
Oh, okay.
No, it's for anybody.
You don't have to be trying out for a part to get the student
ready. Right, you don't have to be a student of the drag. But, it's 18 and up for that show. Student tickets are $15.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And regular tickets are 25 at the door, 20 in advance.
Mm-hmm.
And the shows, again, the Saturday early show is at 7 p.m. at the Baranoff. There's one tonight, right?
Yeah.
Friday night, 10 p.m. at the Rendezvous Bar.
Correct.
And then 7 p.m., the early show with the student rate at 7 p.m., and then the late show is at 10 p.m.
Yeah.
And that one's 21 plus.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Hey, glad you ladies could all make it. Can we hear voices on the goodbye, please?
Oh, well,
goodbye. Hope to see you tonight.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 3rd of May, 2013. It's the birthday of the man who wrote, "A prince never lacks legitimate reasons to break his promise." Niccolo Machiavelli, born in Florence, 1469. At a time when Italy was not a unified country, it was a collection of city-states, a time of instability, Machiavelli lost his job when the city government of Florence was overthrown by the Medici family, and he wrote his book, The Prince, in 1513 as an instruction manual on obtaining and holding on to power, in hopes that he could impress the Medicis and get a job with them. He wrote that morality was irrelevant when it came to running a state, that rulers should be willing to do evil when necessary to hold on to power and maintain security. It's the birthday of the photographer and social reformer Jacob Riis, born in Ribe, Denmark, 1849, whose flash photographs of living conditions in the slums of New York helped bring about housing reforms. It's the birthday of the Israeli poet and novelist Yehuda Amichai, born Ludwig Pfeffer in Würzburg, Germany, 1924, moved to Palestine, became an Israeli citizen, and was one of the first poets to write in colloquial Hebrew. Here's a poem for today by Faith Sheeran, entitled Smoke. It was everywhere in my childhood, in restaurants, on buses or planes. The teacher's lounge looked like London under fog. My grandmother never stopped smoking, and walking in her house was like diving in a dark pond. Adults were dimly lit. They carried matches in their pockets as if they might need fire to see. Cigarette machines inhaled quarters and exhaled rectangles. Women had their own brands, long and thin. One was named Eve, and it was meant to be smoked in a garden thick with summer flowers. I'm speaking of Moods, an old country store where my grandfather met friends and everyone spoke behind a veil of smoke. My Uncle Bill preferred fragrant cigars. I can still smell his postal jacket. He had time to tell stories because he took breaks, and there was something to do with his hands. My mother's bridge club gathered around tables with ashtrays and secrets which are best revealed beside fire. Even the fireplaces are gone, inefficient and messy. We are healthier now and safer. We have exercise and tests for breast or colon cancer. We have helmets and car seats and smokeless coffee shops where coffee has grown frothy and complex. The old movies are so full of smoke that actors are hard to see, and they're often wrapped in smoking jackets, bent over a piano or Kiss. I miss the places smoke created. I like the way people sat down for rest or pleasure and spoke to other people, not phones, and the tiny fire, which is crimson and primitive and warm. How long ago, when humans found this spark of warmth and made their first circle? What about smoke as words or the pipes of peace? In grade school, we learned how it rises and how it can kill. We were taught to shove towels under our closed doors, to stop, drop, and roll. We had a plan to meet our family in the yard, the house behind us alive with all we cannot put out. A poem entitled Smoke by Faith Sheeran from The Empty House, published by Word Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Produced by Joy Biles, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
About 28 minutes before 4 o'clock, you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore hosting today for Juneau Afternoon. My next guest has written a terrific book. The 70-Mile Kid by Tom Walker is the story of a guy named Harry Carstens, whom I think history has forgotten, but Tom Walker certainly has not. And it's an amazing story of the guy who actually was the real leader of the first team to summit Mount McKinley, Denali, the mountain. Amazing tale, Tom.
It's the 100th anniversary this year. They summited it on June 7th, 1913, and this is the 100th anniversary. And that was the golden age of exploration, when people were vying for the North Pole, the South Pole, the Northwest Passage. And one of the last geographic prizes of North America was the summit of Mount McKinley. And prior to their expedition, there had been 8 different expeditions, some of them legendary for their frauds. Yeah. One was the Cook expedition of 1906, where he claimed to have made the summit and didn't come anywhere near it. And then another one was the Sourdough expedition of 1910, where they claimed to have made the summit, both summits, and actually they'd only made, and only is a It's not exactly a great word, because it was still an accomplishment. Two of the members made the north peak of Mount
Which
McKinley.
Is like 1,000 feet.
19,000 something feet, yeah. And it's just 1,000 feet lower than the true summit. But mm-hmm. The leader, Tom Lloyd, had claimed otherwise. And so when they finally made the summit in 1913, it was quite an accomplishment.
Now, the party that actually climbed the summit consisted of a deacon in the Episcopal, Episcopal Church, who had become kind of a peripatetic deacon. He was covering the whole of interior Alaska,
right.
I think, on dog sleds. And then there was a native lad.
Walter Harper.
And then there was another one that was left behind in the low camp.
And that was John Fredson.
Right. And then the other white fellow.
Was Robert Tatum, who was a missionary assistant.
Right, right. So these five guys basically made up the initial climbing party. Right. There was somebody that came out with them, I think, and took the dog teams back to Fairbanks.
Isaiah George, he was another native boy from Nenana Mission, and he just brought in the one dog team with all the stuff, and then when he was done hauling freight, he went back to Nenana. And over the years, the expedition's been called the Stuck Expedition.
Yeah. Because always, Hudson Stuck, who is the deacon involved in this.
Yes, thing. And always recognizes Archdeacon Stuck's climb. And no one else was mentioned except for Walter Harper, because he actually set the first foot on the summit.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you read their diaries, and what I did for my book was I located the four original diaries. I did not go by Stuck's famous book, Ascent of Denali, which has been quoted many times. I went by the four original journals, and you get a completely different picture of what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And Hudson Stuck would have never got anywhere near the summit without Harry Karstens, who is his climbing companion.
Right. Stuck had no prior mountaineering experience, but then nobody in the party did, really.
Well, that was the curious thing he claimed he did. He said he had been to the summit of Mount Rainier, and he said he'd been to the Alps. And he said that he'd climbed the tallest peaks in England, which I guess aren't very tall. But, excuse me, when he got on to the glacier, he seemed to have lost all of his experience. So it was a matter of them picking their own way, finding the routes. And then pretty soon he got to be very frail in his approach. And he was actually 50 years old. He was 5'10" and weighed 140 pounds. And he played out very early on in the expedition. And it was Stuck's partner, Walter Harper, his trail companion on many of his expeditions, who was 21 and powerful, who helped him much of the way, and then Karstens, who actually led the routes.
I think one of the things that may be hard for us to kind of get across in our heads was this is 1913. These guys really didn't know very much about altitude sickness at all. They all had it. With the possible exception of Walters, who didn't seem to succumb to it very much at all.
No, and that is true. They didn't know very much about it. It wasn't until the 1920s, I think it was the 1922 British expedition to Everest, where they first used oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't using oxygen. They didn't have the complete understanding of what it would do to you. They knew you got short of breath and you were tired, but they didn't know the risk of it.
Yeah, Tatum thought he had the flu.
Yeah, he thought he had the flu. And at one point, they were you don't digest your food very well.
Mm-hmm.
And they were Walter Harper had been the cook, and he cooked dinner. And the day they actually made the summit, they were all feeling very ill from his cooking.
Yeah, because the bread had because the altitude was making it very difficult to boil anything or to cook anything.
Right, and his idea of cooking was he made a pot of glop, and then he just dropped in a handful or two of flour, and he called that flour noodles.
Yeah.
And that thickened, and then no one could digest that just raw flour and meal that he'd cooked, and the next day everybody was sick. But if it hadn't been for summit day, some of them would have stayed behind. But as it was, they didn't want to stay behind, so they went to the summit.
Mm-hmm.
And they made it, and when they got to the summit, you know, they had achieved something that previously there had been some technical climbers that had been unable to do.
Now, your book centers on the McKinley thing, but equally as fascinating is this long career that Karstens, who's referred to as the 70-mile kid because he actually, one of his first adventures was on the 70-mile river.
That's correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But this guy was a freighter par extraordinaire and a dog team musher back in the days when basically that was how you got around.
That was true. He ran away from home when he was 17. For 2 years, he wandered the West. No one knew where he was. And his story picks up again in 1897.
Yeah, he was actually in the Gold Rush with his brother, I think, right? Yeah.
He was in Billings, Montana when he heard of the excitement up north. And he stampeded immediately to Seattle, and he got over the Chilkoot Pass by packing other people's goods for a fee. And one day he packed a 100-pound load over the pass for a can of peas. That was his payment.
Yeah.
But that's how he earned his grub stake. And they got over just before the Mounties started to impose a rule where you had to take a year's supply of food and gear with you. And they were in 1897, they were one of the last boats down the Yukon before freeze-up.
Wow. Tom, people are going to get a chance to meet you and see some slides that have never been released before. You're doing two book signings in town and a talk out at the Nugget Mall on Saturday afternoon. So tonight you're at Hearthside from 4 to 7:30 downtown.
Yes, sir.
Okay, and then on Saturday you start at 4 o'clock with the slideshow out at Nugget Mall's Hearthside Bookstore. And you're there until around 7:30 or something like that,
whenever
folks start to drift away from the thing. So copies on sale at both stores.
Yes, it
and
is.
A chance for you to own an autographed copy of the whole thing. This is a wonderful read. It really is. There's a lot of, well, not a lot, but there are many history looks at someone's career that are not near as readable as this one is. And this thing just grabs you. I mean, you just sit there and you think, how could he do that?
You know,
but Carstens. You tell the story extremely well, and you really draw a picture.
Thank
of
you. It was easy to do when you have somebody that rich and original that had done so many things, and he knew Jack London in the Yukon, and there's talk that he was one of the role models for some of Jack London's characters, or one of Jack London's characters, and it's sure believable when you read it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, great job of research. I understand you live in the park?
Yes, I live near Denali Park.
Okay. Well, you've spent your time well. Long, cold winters give you a chance to write, I guess.
Yeah, especially this one.
Okay. Well, thanks for coming to Juneau, and thanks for being available to introduce us to this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Folks, come out and see the slideshow tomorrow at 4 o'clock. Tonight, when you're walking around during Arts Walk, drop by Hearthside Books and get an autographed copy of this man's book. It's a good one. Ragtime music in the background there is provided by Richard Dowling. He's one of the artists in the Juneau Jazz and Classics calendar. His first concert is Wednesday, May 8th at the State Office Building for a brown bag. And then I'm looking down the program here to the first time he's got a full-blown concert, which is looks like the Goldtown Nickelodeon. He's doing music and movie on Monday, May 13th. It's Jazz and Classics time. You want to jump into the middle of that. It's also time for a recital, which is now become one of the this is your 23rd?
23rd.
Yeah, hang
correct.
On. I don't have you on the air yet. There, now you can.
There we go, yes.
Now you have a voice.
Our 23rd annual recital.
That's amazing.
Yep.
So, DeSmet and Berger have become now the full circle music.
Yes. Yep. Right. Well, Mary, has lived in town for a long time, 30 years or longer, probably 35 or something. And so she did her music studio as Heart and Soul for a long time. And I joined her about 12 years ago now. So So I've been in Juneau for about 12 years, and when we joined forces, we changed the name of the business. So we called it Full Circle, Full Circle mm-hmm. Music.
Right. And Full Circle, of course, has both gospel and folk kinds of twists.
Connotations.
To it. Yeah, yeah. So,
yeah.
Briefly, tell me about your studio. When you see the online pictures, it looks like you've got you're running a band in there.
Well, well, Mary and I, besides teaching, we do a lot of performing as a duo. And we also perform with other musicians around town, as needed. And for the fun of it. Mm-hmm. So we play for the local contra dances, which happen every month. We have a Doug Smith plays piano with us. Sometimes our students play with us at the recitals.
In the lobby for the Bowls? Was that you?
Yeah. Mary and I played for Empty Bowls. Yeah. We've done that every year for about 8 years now. That's a really fun gig. There's no mics to set up, and you're right there. The people are standing 5 feet from you, so
and then
connection.
I'm thinking you guys were out at the garden fair last year.
We've done the community garden fair a couple of years, but we haven't done it in the last.
And we need a roof over here.
Past couple of years, but we've done the community garden fair.
That's tough out there. That's
cold and
cold and
did. We did Blessing of the Fleet way back a long time ago, and it got so cold that it blew. I couldn't keep the bow on my fiddle. It was blowing the bow off of my fiddle. It was so cold and blowing.
But this is your students now.
Yeah. So what we're doing this weekend, we do this at the end of the year in the spring, every year the same time. It's Saturday and Sunday. It's our students.
This is at Aldersgate.
Yes, it's at Aldersgate Church.
I got to say, Aldersgate has such wonderful acoustics. We own a concert hall for an intimate concert hall. It's wonderful. When you can get into Aldersgate, it's just beautiful.
Yeah, it has wonderful acoustics. And it's a nice, airy, light, nicely lit room, lots of windows. So it's very pleasant just even to sit there.
Yeah.
And each recital will be different, so the Saturday recital and the Sunday recital have different students. There'll be 32 students both days, so there's a lot of different talent, everything from just beginners, 6-7-year-olds coming in and playing on the piano and the guitar and whatnot, to our high school seniors. Mm-hmm. We have several graduating seniors this year. I can't remember how many exactly, 4 or 5.
And let's make sure that we say the times. Now, this is Sunday, May 5th, Saturday, May 4th, and Sunday, May 5th, this Saturday and Sunday at 3 o'clock.
At 3 o'clock.
Okay.
Right. And it usually lasts about almost 2 hours. And there's a reception that's free. It's all free.
Okay.
So anyone can come, and we really like to have community people come. Just come in and enjoy the music. It's really fun. And it's great to see the little kids, shaking out their first couple tunes and learning about playing in public, and then it's wonderful to see the older kids really just tearing it up. I mean, there's some phenomenal players that we have. We're blessed.
Yeah, yeah. So
3 o'clock.
3 o'clock Saturday, 3 o'clock Sunday at Aldersgate Church.
That's correct.
The 23rd, amazing number, the 23rd annual recital of Full Circle Music
Full Circle Music.
And the studio students showing off their stuff and entertaining everyone who drops in for free, along with the reception. Well, thank you so much for bringing this to our attention.
You're very welcome.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Music in the background by one of the groups that's going to be here for Juno Jazz and Classics. It runs from today was the start of it. Tonight is the Arlo Guthrie concert, and it goes through May 18th. So we have a huge amount of wonderful music coming to Juno for Juno Jazz and Classics. About to get a show ticket so you can go to all of the events. With me in the studio now is quilter Carol Suring and Aaron Suring, who is part of the Alaska Robotics Gallery. And you're here to talk about a show that you're opening tonight because everybody will be walking around during Arts Walk downtown.
Yes.
So yes. Tell us about your quilts.
I started doing traditional quilts, and then I didn't like following directions. So I just kind of did my own thing.
Yeah.
And I started taking classes and doing things, and the more I got to looking at different, the way people put different things together, it intrigued me, and so I started taking a couple classes online, and it just kind of evolved, and it's kind of fun to do. It's always exciting to see how things come together.
So When you're doing something like a quilt piece, are you fitting that? Do you still follow the traditional pattern of squares of quilts that are quilted together? Then
sometimes.
Okay.
Sometimes it just kind of goes off on its own. I do a lot of my own hand dyeing, and in doing that, the colors and the way the colors go together kind of say that what it wants to do and how it wants to look.
Hmm.
And so I just kind of, sometimes it gets ripped apart and thrown away, and sometimes it really works. I have a couple critics in the house that tell me whether it's good or not.
Who are these critics?
My husband and my sister comes over.
Oh, okay, and looks at it and says, nah.
I go, oh, I wouldn't do that.
And you always listen to them?
Well, usually I listen to Lowell, my husband, because he really does.
He
keeps saying, well, I don't know what you're after, but this doesn't look good. And it usually it's, if I tweak it just a little bit so that it feels good to him, it actually does look better. I just don't want him to know that.
Well, he's not listening. And none of your friends will tell him. So we're in great shape here. You said you dye your own stuff.
Yeah.
What are you using? Are you using, like, natural dyes? Or?
Some of it was natural dyes. I went down to the Houston Quilt Show this last year, and we used natural dyes, and that was kind of exciting. But
were you an exhibitor?
No. Oh, I was just there to get as much information and absorb as much as I could.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the dyes that I use a proactive dye, which you have to use like a soda ash and soak it and leave it and then fix it with heat type of thing so that the color comes out. And it always comes out, at least I haven't been able to get it to come out consistently the same way. So it's always a surprise or a serendipitous thing.
A more organic process, though.
I used to have a friend who would come to my house and make potato salad, and when he would put it on the table, he would always say, "You'll never have this potato salad again." And it sounds like those are the colors you're getting. You'll never see this color again, but it's the color it is. And then
the way they mix together, and some things come out prominent, and so.
So you're really talking about a kind of a voyage of discovery here, for you as well as I would imagine the person who looks at your hanging. And kind of goes along with you on this trip.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things that's kind of exciting for me. And then when you have so much of it, then what do you do? I mean, you keep making them, or do you put them in a box, or what do you do? So then
have a show.
Yeah, yeah. So you find some place where there's a lot of wall space, and you put them up on the wall. So this is at Alaska Robotic Gallery.
Yep.
There may be one person left in Juneau who doesn't know where that is, so we should tell them.
It's on 220 Front Street, right next to the theater downtown, between there and the Viking.
Okay, this is the one that for quite some time had a great painting of a unicorn in the window.
Oh, yeah.
With the best caption I have read on the unicorn painting for a long time. Anyway, so is this a solo show?
Yes.
Oh,
yep.
Wow.
Yeah,
so the, you got the whole studio.
She's she's our exhibit this
I'm taking
this
it from
Friday.
The last names that you had to kind of an in at the studio. Is that right?
Yeah, she's my mother. She came into town just for a week and a half now. And
oh, yeah?
Just to have the show.
Where's home?
Surring, Wisconsin.
Oh, Surring?
Yeah.
Surring. There's too many Surrings in here. A town named after you?
My husband's family.
Really?
Yeah, I married the king.
You married the king. Cool. So you liking our beautiful summer weather?
Well, we used to live here.
Oh, you did?
Quite a few years ago when he was in middle school.
Uh-huh. No surprise.
And so we were just surprised that there was so much snow. I mean,
so were we.
Every day there, except for the last 2 days, it was snow.
Yeah. Boy, howdy, there was snow. Yeah, I'm getting charged for having my driveway plowed in May. That's wrong. So very wrong.
Not how
well,
she remembered
it. It was the end of April, I guess. So anyway, it'll go on last month's bill. Anyway, this is. I think this is going to be amazing. Can you give us just a brief description of a couple of the pieces people will see when they come in?
Some of it has applique flowers with beading on it. Some of it is very geometric.
Mm-hmm.
And I did painting on some. I did some thread play on some.
What about the tree one? I think that was great. I really like that one.
The tree one was... you started off with just threads that go up in through a water-soluble stabilizer, and then you just kept wrapping around threads and sewing them in until you got to look like a tree and it branched out.
Hmm.
And then you...
And it really has dimensions. It's a three-dimensional almost kind of like pulls off the fabric, too.
So some of this does have in and out a Z-axis dimension, a mathematician would say, towards you and away from you.
Yeah, not a whole lot, but there is some real texture and things. That was a class that I had taken online that showed how to do things, and so... and then there's beaded leaves that go on it.
Isn't it wonderful how you can find the answers to little problems and questions online? No.
And things that you have, you know, things that I bought 3-4 years ago, all of a sudden go, aha, I can use
that's
this.
That's where it belongs.
Yeah. Now I know why know why I was looking at that website, right.
You have this Alaskan mentality that you don't throw anything away because it can always be used.
Sounds like a great show. You probably need to dash over there and get the last of the hangings done and get the cookies out on the plates and all that sort of stuff, right?
I think we're just about ready.
What time are you opening the front door?
It's open, but we'll have the gallery. The show will start at 4:30.
4:30.
Yeah.
Okay. 4:30. And the address again for the robotics gallery?
It's 220 Front Street.
220 Front Street. Quilted Works by Carol Suring. Wall hangings. I'm assuming that if someone fell in love, they could ante up some bucks and take it home, right?
Please.
Wonderful. Yeah. Okay. All right. So
give her some space to create some new stuff. So,
So we need to have a little more space on the walls. Thank you so much. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
You're more than a minor drag. Now the clock on the wall says 11:30. Give a minute or two. When the little and the big hen meet at 12, I want to see the last of you. I know I said I loved you, but tonight, my honey dear, three other words are on my mind. You're out of here. Take your books and your bike and your bark the lounger. Leave the table and chairs. Keep your big mouth shut or I'll tell you what. You're gonna feel your butt bounce down the stairs. No time for explanations or one more German beer. Put down the chips and read my lips. You're out of here. Go, damn you, go. None of your crying. No reminders of the tender kiss. You won't be supplying. Book the closet, sleep in the park, or ring up that blonde cashier. Stay wherever you want to. You're out of here. Your favorite pastime is to nag me. You bully and you bluster like some would-be Jimmy Cagney. My sweaters are too small, my 501s are far too baggy. It bugs me, I've got to set you free. Tick-tock, tick-tock.
Lorraine Feather, she's one of the artists in Juno Jazz and Classics.
Tonight on 360 North at 8, The Juno World Affairs Council presents the hydropolitics of Palestine and Israel. At 9, Frank Kearns, American correspondent, documents early television news, geopolitical intrigue, and the ethics of information gathering in a dangerous world. Great Decisions in Foreign Policy is at 10, followed by Platts Energy Week, This Week in Defense News, and BioCentury This Week. It's a great way to look at public affairs tonight on 360 North.
You're in tune with KTOO News. It's just a few seconds before 4 o'clock when we'll hear All Things Considered. KTOO broadcasts on 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas, and we're also broadcasting on a set of translators throughout the area. K276 AF at 103.1 in the Verlinock Bay, Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, 101.7, K269 AO, Gustavus, K201 AM, 88.1, K220 BT, Hoonah, 91.9, and Excursion Inlet, Nicey Strait, K210 AS, 89.9.